Vegas, baby, Vegas!
At the end of the game, you count up your money. That's how you find out who's bet.
All my bets were safe. There just wouldn't be any juice.
The point spreads, the prop bets, the teasers, the parlays. From Vegas to you, this is Behind the Bets.
Back from vacation, spending all of my money that he won and earned on Baby Bankroll Bonanza. Kai is back in the producer chair. Good to see you, my man.
Yo, likewise, man. A lot has changed, man. We have a real, I don't want to say movie star because that wouldn't be appropriate, but a real star.
No, it certainly would not be. I don't even know any kind of star, but off the top, man,
congrats. I know how hard you work. I know how much you believe in this space. And, you know, I didn't know quite what you've been doing behind the scenes when you've been having meetings and jumping out of the host chair to go do impromptu meetings. But I see the fruits of what you've been doing, and it's amazing. So I'm really happy for you.
Thanks, dude. Yeah, there's been a lot in the works. Obviously, you were privy to some of this when we did some pilots in the fall. Yep. And look, it's been an ongoing discussion for a long time. That's why the podcast became what it is. That's why Stanford Stephen the Bear had their separate podcast. This is all part of the process. Look, sometimes we get lost in the mayhem because we have a product that gets made 7 days a week, right? TV content. Yep. We have no long weekend. We don't just close on a holiday. We're just very overwhelmed with content, and especially when you factor in .com and an app and ESPN Plus, it's really, really bottomless. It's not just a fixed amount of hours on a certain channel. We just have unlimited space, and we are adjusting just like every network is across the landscape of television and trying to figure out content. But this is a great opportunity for the betting space and the betting circles to hopefully, you know, resonate with generic sort of TV executives and realize that there is an appetite for this with consumers and that there is a world where regular news can coexist with gambling news. And that's what we're kind of trying to achieve with our show. And it's been a lot of fun. We're only 2 days in. Preston Johnson is one of many analysts on the show. He's going to be coming up later on this podcast. We're going to talk a little March Madness, talk a little NBA. And it's just fun to get a nice collaboration of opinions and new voices and then some old ones too, like Stanford Steve of the Bear, myself. It's just a lot of fun to get out there and let our hair down a little bit.
I love it. I love it.
Do you also love the big news surrounding the New York Giants?
So you're telling me there's a chance?
Well, not New York, but now Cleveland. Cleveland is now among the favorites, Kai.
Oh, man. Cleveland from worst to first. Seriously, like, they have a squad. And, I mean, all the best to Odell Beckham Jr. I mean, I guess he's polarizing to some, but for me, he's always been an outstanding great player for the football Giants. And good for him. He got his money, everything. But I just don't understand. I talked to Matt Barry a little bit earlier, and he kind of, you know, gave me some angles where it may make sense what they're doing, but as of right now, it makes no sense to me. When I saw that last night, I thought it was like a joke. I thought somebody was, you know, trying to be provocative. But at the end of the day, I think that we truly can't move forward if we keep a lot of the, for lack of a better term, baggage that we had throughout the year. So if in hindsight, you know, after this upcoming season, if we make the playoffs and everything is good, then of course everybody's going to call Gettleman a genius. Right now, everybody's calling him a dope. So I'm just confused.
Well, I told you. Now you know why I said I just don't think he's very smart. And it worried me moving forward because I'll tell you why. When you have one of the top picks in the draft and you have waited months to make your pick and you don't wait the full time that you're allotted to make that pick, and I know you want Barkley, but you don't know who gets, you know, emotional at the very, very last second. You should be thorough and you should do your due diligence, and you owe it to your fan base and your employer to let the clock run the entire way because you don't know if someone's going to come in and offer a Herschel Walker package.
Right.
Right. You just can't be stupid. There's no reason. You should be able to manage it all. Now, it's unlikely that would have happened, but you just never know.
Right.
So Gettleman got up there and then mocked analytics and all this other stuff, and he's just out of touch, outdated, and didn't seem very smart to me. And we'll see if this works out. I don't know. I mean, obviously, I don't have
a lot of faith in it.
But I don't have any faith. Right. Yeah. And it's just kind of funny that they are now rebuilding with this ancient quarterback where they should have gotten rid of him earlier and rebuilt on the fly. So now they're going to use their all-world running back, in a rebuilding mode and get him all those miles on those
and
tires?
Supposedly, according to our ESPN, we're talking to Kyler Murray between today and tomorrow. Like, okay, we can talk to Kyler Murray, but I mean, until, like, I don't understand a full rebuild not starting with the quarterback position.
Well, look, there's a lot of there's a long sequence of events that need to occur. Usually the quarterback is kind of the first thing, like maybe the Jets are doing,
right,
and maybe the Browns started with Baker Mayfield, but they start, I mean, everyone starts it, depends where you draw the timeline, but maybe the quarterback just won't be one of the first things they've done, right? Either way, it's just kind of funny, and I wanted to get your opinion. We're going to talk much more about this throughout the offseason and everything, but just to keep in mind, just put things in perspective, 25-1 was what the Browns were before the trade. Now they're 14-1. They're tied for the fourth lowest odds, so they're among the favorites on that graphic. We did it on SportsCenter today. It's just crazy to see New England, Green Bay, wow, Kansas City.
I'm sure Murray's excited.
And there's Cleveland, right. So no Hugh Jackson. You get rid of that knucklehead. So a franchise that won one game in 2 years had to celebrate a win with Bud Lights and opening a fridge is now among the favorites. So a lot of fun. But we're going to get to Preston Johnson momentarily, talk March Madness. Last week we had Matt Eumanns on, buying and selling teams. I believe it was last week. If not, it was the week before. And giving out some winners. Actually, I think that was 2 weeks ago. Excuse me. We had Mr. Director John Murray on a week ago. So, Kai, good to have you back, albeit temporarily. I know you're on to bigger and better things. And appreciate it. It's exciting, man. And you've been along for the ride, and we're all getting along. It's just seeing it on SportsCenter. I just did a hit and cross promotion really resonates as well. So, and how about my first winner on the ice? I went to the ice for my best bet. So, all right. So coming up is Preston Johnson, but first a word from one of our sponsors. There's a reason half of business travelers do not use their company's chosen travel management platform. Booking business travel is still ridiculously outdated, time-consuming, and costly. If you're frustrated with your company's travel management program or lack thereof, you need to look into Trip Actions. They take the pain out of corporate travel with a complete solution that helps businesses save and keeps employees happy. The reason Trip Actions works so well is that it's the first travel management platform designed from the ground up with the road warrior in mind. It's easy to book your company's business travel from the app or desktop, with 24/7 proactive support around the globe and incentives for employees to save on travel expenses. Companies large and small see over 90% adoption and save up to 34% on travel spend when they use Trip Actions. Companies from Lyft to Sara Lee's Frozen Bakery trust Trip Actions with their business travel. Trip Actions rewards travelers for saving their company money, and they'll reward you just for checking them out. Reshape your company's business travel today with Trip Actions. Go to tripactions.com/thebets. Complete a 30-minute demo with a Trip Actions account executive, and you'll get a $100 Amazon gift card. But it's this month only. tripactions.com/thebets for a free demo and a $100 Amazon gift card. tripactions.com/thebets. All right, let's now welcome in person, in studio, Preston Johnson, professional bettor and a man who made his ESPN debut on the airwaves this week on Daily Wager. Preston, good to have you in here.
Good to be here. Thanks for having me.
All right, man. So you've been around, you've already been to the campus before, but now this was like your full treatment here. You got the day on the show, yeah. You got the pod here live in front. What's it been like for you?
I mean, it's a little hectic. Like, even coming here, I was trying to figure out which building this is even in. It's massive for people that haven't obviously been to this campus. It's ridiculous here in Bristol. And then there's a North Campus I haven't even been to yet, actually.
That's only like one big building.
Yeah. It really is. It's all connected. And so I'm turning like 17 times trying to find which skywalk's the correct one to get over here. But it's also, everyone's been, you know, really genuine and, you know, helping me out and, at least accepting so far. We haven't been too bad on TV yet, I don't think. So, so far, so good.
Well, it doesn't help for your directions when the guy texting you doesn't know the building number.
That was correct. That was on you. I will blame you for that.
I apologize for that. Kai, how do I not know the building number of this?
I don't know. We've only been recording here for about over a year. So
This building. So building 4 is where I work in usually. That's normal.
Yep.
And then I always thought this was building 3.
Well, what do you, when you go through building?
You go through 3.
You go through right through building 3. So what did you think that was?
Oh, 3's over there. Okay. Directly across. Okay.
That should tell you guys how
it is. So building 2 is connected to 3. So I'm not that off, but I was off. Well, it's good, man. It's good having you on. Obviously, I think you've been great. You and I have had conversations. I thought your analysis has been awesome. Look, TV's hard, and I know all you listening are probably laughing. Oh, you're just a prompter jockey, and you're just an idiot. And it's like very elaborate. And the one thing I've thought of is a lot of times there's been coaches that either get fired or take a break from the team for like 2 years and then do TV, sometimes here in studio, and then go back to coaching. And they always say things like, hey, I have a much different appreciation for the media. You hear that a lot from
people. Absolutely.
Yeah. And I just think people don't realize what goes on to put on a production like this.
I certainly didn't. I mean, after the first show when we launched, I mean, there was 75 people in a group shot. We took a picture after. Doug's listening to things, trying to recall things. He's reading things, all while getting someone talking in his ear, looking at a prompter. They're moving you from desk to desk while you're talking live while graphics are going. People don't realize you're actually like on the move a lot. I would have fallen 3 or 4 times. So, absolutely. It's ridiculous. It's next level. And, you know, you can actually talk sports betting a little bit while you're doing all that too. So it's perfect.
Well, yeah, I do that in my sleep. So that's the easy part. No, I appreciate you saying that. Really, I've always said television and on air radio and whatever it's just a craft. Like it's juggling, right? We all started, a lot of us, early in our careers, and it's like juggling 2 tennis balls, then it's 3 tennis balls, then it's 4, and by this time we're doing knives and chainsaws and flaming torches, and but it's no, like, it's just a craft that we've kind of honed over the years, and we just have that training, but it's more like, I love how you mentioned how everyone's so genuine here, because the people behind the scenes is what makes it work, and there's so many smart people, and yeah, like, we'll get mentioned in a press release here and there, but there's so much more to it, and the senior leadership we have, and the show producers and everyone else, the researchers, are just the, you know, the meat and potatoes of the operation. And that's really what makes it easy on air to a certain extent.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, they've been great. And so far, I think so good. We haven't had any errors. I know yesterday, we met after the show. Did anything go wrong? And most people are like, no, pretty clean show, actually.
Right.
So we're 2 for 2, I think. We got another one coming up later today, and we'll keep it rolling here.
We are. Now, look, you've sweat out picks before. You've done on radio, on many platforms, podcasts. Yeah. Your own wagers as well. Where does like a pick on ESPN rank for you?
You probably got tired of me texting you Monday night when when Monmouth Iona over 139. There was 32 points the first 6 minutes and it totally died. I actually had to sweat it out the whole, you know, I guess they finally scored about a minute and a half left to put it over. But it's money is not even a thing in your head at that point. It was, I want to at least go 1-1 on my first night on TV. Luckily, the Bucks got there last night after they started horribly shooting as well. So, like, kind of similar to the Pistons. They were 4-for-19. I was like, this Bucks team total over is going to lose. Got there without a problem. So we're 2-1 so far. I might hang them up. I'll let you guys know if I'm coming back or not.
Bullet Costanza.
Yeah, 67%.
I'm out. But no, it is very stressful because there's the trolls out there. But I've always said this, and, you know, as you know from all the other broadcasts you've done, it's like no one should follow anyone blindly, right? You want to listen to people's analysis. Collaboration. I mean, even on the first night, we were on opposite sides in our best bets. Like two guys were, including myself, were on one side. Another guy was on the opposite side. It's just, you know, we submit them separately, individually. And I just think, and you agree. I mean, I'm curious. Like, you can love someone and think they have great rationale, but if you're on the other side of something or you don't like, you don't have to back that guy. I think the show about for us, in my eyes, is presenting a collaboration of information and opinions and analysis and letting the viewer do what they want.
Yeah, I mean, the idea is to ultimately help the viewer make a more informed decision, which they're doing if they watch the show, whether they bet or not, right? Hopefully, we're picking winners more often than not as well. Hopefully, it makes it a little more entertaining because there's a lot of new eyes to this space in general that are betting really small where they're just doing it for fun, right? And if we're able to make, you know, at least make you feel better about a side that you liked already, or maybe you liked the other side and we were telling you things that make you feel like, okay, maybe I should stay off. You know, that's a win too, especially if it ends up losing. So
actually a better win. You got plus 110 on your bet.
That's true.
You made
110. That's a great point. So yeah, and there's a ton of information out there. That's kind of, I think, one of the, I guess, main feedback, angles I got that first night after we did the show is, you know, it's a lot. It's pretty fast. We're going through as many games as we can, which I think is good because we want to give the viewer as much action as, or at least potential action as possible. But if you're brand new to the space, it kind of feels like a different language on the other side. And so as you're watching it, you're going to, you know, learn more. But I think ultimately don't try to bet every best bet, you know, that we put up there just because, you know, just do what feels right, what you're comfortable with. And ultimately it is just for fun. And we're trying to just, you know, make some money on the side if we can.
Right. And sometimes we're going to break down a 7-10 game in the tournament and you may just be filling out your bracket.
Right.
Right. You may want to listen. Like, well, you know, like last year, what, Butler was the only 10 seed that was favored.
And that was a short favorite.
Yeah, it was 1.5, yeah. I want to say. And so you'll see stuff like that that'll kind of just data points or fantasy football or pick'em leagues in the fall, right? We're going to all be, a lot of us are, and the listeners are in pick'em leagues, and it's really no just straight wagers, if you will. So, I mean, there's a lot of overlap fantasy as well. And then people who just, to your point, like the space. So hopefully we are entertaining, but it is fun to track people's bets. And, of course, there's some trolls out there who like to look at things through a negative light.
That's part of the fun, too, though.
Yeah.
They'll get over it, I think.
Yeah, how do you process it all?
I got used to it a long time ago. I was posting stuff on Twitter for years. And, I mean, you feel bad if you lose for people that are maybe following. Like the other night when we had that Celtics second half against the Warriors.
Right.
I mean, I tweeted really early during the half, I would bet plus 11 and the money line at plus 500.
Right.
In the second half, I don't think the Warriors are, you know, showing up. And had those lost, I would have felt bad because there's a good portion of people that liked the tweet and probably bet it or saw it. Luckily, those won, so right. That was a good night. But, I mean, there's going to be times I'm losing, too. You know, you're only trying to win a little bit more often than you're losing. But, you know, it's kind of part of the mental game. I think whether you're betting your own money regularly, too, is, you know, whether I was playing poker back in the day, it's just all part of the kind of the psyche of a gambler, just making sure you're doing things the right way and putting the past behind you, and you can only control what's going to happen next and trying to make your process as sound as possible.
Yeah, I kind of just – I said something like, hey, for those thinking that they're going to jump on the Warriors second half here, just because they always do, just they don't look like they have it tonight. Like that was sort of my thing.
I
was just like, yeah, second quarter. I was like, I'm scared for all the people that are going to blindly bet the Warriors second half because of the, so often they rally, but they just do not have it.
Well, it's interesting because I'm very price dependent, and I even texted you during that second quarter, and I said, man, this might be 9 second half. We might get plus 9 here on the Celtics. Right. And it came out at 11.
11.
Like, that's just a huge discrepancy in a second half, side. Then the money line's, you know, a total of maybe $1.50 higher than it would have been. Anyway, so that's why we went to town on it. But it's definitely surprising. But you're right. The Warriors just always get bet when they're down at halftime. Really, seemingly, no matter who they're playing or what they look like first half.
Interesting game tonight. Rockets going for the season sweep, I should say. No Kevin Durant. Houston now up to 3.5. I had to do a pick for ESPN Chalk. That was my one play. I don't love the card. I like this play. I don't love it. But there's no way. There's just sort of this blind trust in the Warriors, and it's understandable given what they've done over the years. And they have certainly had flashes where they've convinced us, or at least backers they've convinced, that it's just boredom and apathy, and this is a big game they'll get up for. But and we saw a taste of that against Denver on Friday night. But this... Without Durant, this is not a switch. I'm not optimistic they'll flip. I like Houston.
Yeah, and I think people automatically assume because they're off of a loss against the Suns, you're going to get max effort. You probably are. I think maybe defensively they're going to be there. They kind of always take it personal when they play Houston anyway. The games kind of are going down to the wire, it seems like, regularly ever since that playoff series last year.
Right.
I didn't have enough of an edge to bet, like my standard bet sizing, on the under, but I do think it's about 2.5 points high. 3 points high, you can get 230, 230.5 out there. I'd probably buy it at 231.5. That would be my buy point. So it's not quite there, but the last few years, Steph Curry's on-off net rating stuff with the Warriors team has been superior to Durant's until this season. This is actually the first season that Durant has been the more impactful Golden State Warrior, which is interesting now that he's probably going to be leaving. So he has been a big deal. They were actually leading that game when he did hurt his ankle at home against the Suns, and then they blew the game after he ended up leaving. So I think he makes a bigger impact to this particular team than we realize because they are less deep. They don't have too many bigs. DeMarcus Cousins has been a net negative for this team so far. They're trying to implement him. They do slow the game down. You mentioned it to me, and I actually mentioned this. I feel like maybe we were doing a rehearsal or something for one of the shows last week, but you know, they go more stagnant on offense when they're trying to implement Boogie, post him up down low, and that's hurting their offense, but it's also slowing down the pace and the possession. So I think in general, the loss of Durant's going to be good for an under. I haven't, since you told me that Durant was officially out, run back numbers to see where I would have it, but my true line was 227.5, so it's close. With Durant out, maybe that drops a little bit, and maybe I will end up getting some money down here on the under 230.5.
So when you run your numbers, is it like simulations? I mean, so I know you do all the per game stuff, but then how, when you have a matchup, is it simulations?
I don't actually have, like, I'm pushing a button that runs a simulator a million times, and then this is what it says. It's more like I can just have, it's, you know, it's automated, but if I take out Durant and his player value and substitute his projected minutes with these other names, it will automatically just kind of, you know, lower the total a little bit. It'll also make the spread a little bit different. And so I just have to do that. It's really quick. It takes about 10 seconds, but I'm not like running a computer simulation where they're supposedly playing games in some alternate universe.
So in theory, with their, I tend to oversimplify things too much, and it's just not that easy.
Yeah.
Like I've asked I bored the hell out of Jeff Saturday, Hasselbeck, and I've asked him punter questions, backup punter. It gets annoying, so I apologize. But so if you're modeling and all the market, the people influencing the market, right, the bettors, the high-level math guys influencing the market, and they're doing similar approaches with their math models, why doesn't the market settle where you have it? Is your just model that different than the other bettors?
No, that's a good question. I think there's two parts of it. Sometimes it does. You know, like there were some college basketball plays I sent in last night for today for conference tournaments that I sent into some producers we're going to try to use for the show. Some of them have moved and we can't use them for the show anymore. So in that case, you know, I'm glad I'm on the right side, at least what's looking like the sharp side.
Right.
Whether or not
you were ahead of the market move.
It's ahead of the market. Sometimes you're not, and so you make adjustments game to game. You know, that's one thing I think people undervalue or underutilize is just how valuable and efficient that market close is before a tip off of a game, whether it's college or NBA, whether it's football. You know, everyone in the world that's betting into this game, right before tip off, that's the numbers they think it should be. So if I'm off a little bit from the closing number, you know, I'm usually making an adjustment. Like even the Bucks total, I actually ended up betting 234.5. I also bet the Bucks team total over that close to 237. So that's even though I had it a little bit higher than 237, that, you know, that was a positive sign that I was probably on the right track more often than not. It's going to depend. There's other people out there that are betting into them too. But if I'm wrong, like there was actually a college basketball total I bet that moved a half point against me so far today. And, you know, that's something you just got to make an adjustment for going forward. And it's just a constant process every day as games are going week to week.
So let's talk more about college hoops. Obviously, busy time of year. And, you know, look, it's pretty tough. We talked about it on the show yesterday. There were some ugly matchups early in the week when you talk about the bigger conference tournaments, right? We have Pitt and BC. We ended up not discussing on the show. That was going to be
you one. Wanted Pitt.
I
you
did
can
like
take credit.
Pitt.
You like Pitt. You bet some money on it, I think.
But you know, I ended up going my best bet on the ice. So that's Kai. That's the answer to the trivia question. My first winning best bet on the show.
Okay.
NHL. Dallas Stars at the Sabres minus $1.35.
I wouldn't have guessed that. That was a big underdog before the show started.
Shout out to our boy Mitch. I'm sure you used some of his.
No, it wasn't a first period total. It was guys in the pod who work on the show.
Okay.
And I've always said that, right? Like I've done well, but it's a large part. It's because I'm an aggregator of information. I can reach out to people that I trust in this space, and we kind of just collaborate. And I think, Preston, obviously I've relied on you a lot. I've relied on others. I just think that's the best way to approach things.
I think for someone that's brand new to this, too much information could possibly be too much. But once you're able to kind of, you know, hold your ground and understand the information that's coming in, all of it helps. I mean, there's not information for me at this point that I can't at least use to some degree. You know, there's so many variables to this formula of how are we going to beat a point spread or a total. And if you're just getting information from people that are not even bettors, but like you're saying, you know, you can reach out to people here at ESPN that just have an interesting take on a game, or maybe, you know, they're down on the field and, you know, they're seeing someone warm up. Like something as little as that can, you know, go a long way as far as just ultimately making a decision on a bet that you were thinking about. So there's so many little angles to this. And if you're able to, you know, like you said, aggregate them all and then make your decisions with any numbers that you're using on top of it, it definitely can only, I think, benefit what you're trying to do here with your process.
Yeah, the most resonating lessons are the ones you learn the hard way. And I've certainly done that. And I've cut back on those. I'm hoping our listeners can avoid that, right?
Yeah.
Just learn from some tips and perspective from people who've learned it the hard way.
We've all learned it the hard way.
Yeah. All right. So we have these conference tournaments. Like, for example, here's something I've tweeted about. USC and UCLA.
Mm-hmm.
1-21 against the spread this entire season as an underdog. Not good. So you have short numbers here with USC and UCLA today. One coming up at 3 p.m. So by the time this posts, not a lot of people are going to get this. But even with the night game with Stanford and UCLA, I like Stanford. I like with USC, I don't trust Arizona. The coaching issue, they've been a mess, and they're laying 1.5. I mean, I like the 1-21 against the number as a dog, but I think for me, the takeaway is not so much these short numbers. It's more like when they're catching like 6-7 on the road in a tough environment, they'll fold.
Right. That's what's happened this year.
Right.
These games that are like pick and they are a neutral, it's not a road game, it's a little bit different. USC and UCLA tend to travel better to Vegas for the Pac-12 tournament. Arizona usually does too, although they're in an interesting spot with everything, which apparently Sean Miller grabbed a mic after the last game and said, thanks for the 10 years. He didn't say he's done, but like he made it sound like he is.
Sure suggested
so. Maybe this is his last hurrah. They're probably not making the tournament unless they win this thing. So I stayed away from both of these games. I will just preface this with that. But both I had closer to like a true pick. So at UCLA +2 would actually be a very small play for me. I would need
based
two
on the
half,
model and
just
how
based
you
on the straight
things.
Projection. Yeah, I actually had UCLA a very small favor, like -0.4. So at this point, if they're getting +2, that's something I'm maybe going to be looking at 2.5 if it is to get there. USC Arizona is spot on though. I think Arizona should be a slight favorite. So it was pretty much there. USC, you know, that's a team that kind of had more hype coming into the season than what they've displayed. And the Pac-12 as a whole has kind of been like that, where they just really haven't met any expectations at all.
Oregon is the sixth seed according to our Basketball Power Index. The highest likelihood to win the conference tournament, so it's really wide open. Washington, clearly the favorite, but we talked about it on the show last night. You thought Utah was maybe the value play at 12-1.
Yeah, and this is just so wide open for a major conference to not really have a favorite. I mean, there is a literal technical favorite, right? But Utah's, I mean, just as close. They were 3-seed in the conference, and they're 12-1. I think I even found a 13-1. I had to take it. I think Larry Scobiak is the best coach in the conference. I said yesterday on the show, but might be a little bit of homer because I did go to Utah for my graduate work. But I think from a tournament standpoint that's short and quick, where you're doing short turnarounds on games the next day and you're scheming for your opponent, having a coaching edge is even compounded more. And it's something that you can't really project in a model. And so if I had value on Utah anyway, and I think he's the best coach, and then, you know, just a couple of years ago, they went to the final. I think they ended up losing to Oregon. But they've done it before. I don't mind it, you know, getting a little long shot in there in a conference that I think is just wide open.
In terms of this conference tournament and others, let's start, like, what any games jump out to you maybe starting tonight or tomorrow?
Sure. I actually did bet the other two Pac-12 games.
Oh, nice. So, beat me.
And I think these are still within range. I mean, they might be on the show later tonight. But I like Cal quite a bit. I bet them +10.5 last night. Down to 10 most spots, I'd still bet it at 10. And then Washington State, I mean, everyone's hyping up kind of Oregon. Oh, they're a 6 seed, but they've won 4 in a row. And you know, this one I had closer to 9, I think, 9.2. So at 11.5, I took Washington State getting the points. I think part of it is that Oregon just beat Washington State on the road by 11. And they blitzed them right from the get-go. I think they were up 11 at halftime. And the second half was closer. But both of those, you know, just basically straight numbers plays. I think the market reaction to Oregon is playing a toll. And then Cal, they've won 3 in a row. They've actually played pretty well. You're hearing about the
one at Stanford.
Yeah, you heard about the big bets. There's a few of them in Vegas on Cal to win it all at, I think, 200-1 and 100-1. win the Pac-12 tournament.
Oh, okay.
Which is a really big number for a Pac-12 tournament. So get a little money line tonight, maybe. Maybe someone knows something. But I did think at 10.5 or 10, it was slightly high. I mean, even if you just think of it, like, should Colorado be laying double digits on a neutral court? Like, that just feels wrong, right?
Right.
Like, they're probably not winning by 11 or more very often. I had it, you know, closer to 9 as well. So I'm going to be taking the Bears and the Cougars, Washington State.
Nice. Well, what other conference tourneys?
Let's see. Today, you want to give you some actual conference tournaments I've bet on winners and stuff?
Like, let's do just sides that will be available when the podcast posts. Like,
okay.
You know, the Big Ten tonight, 6:39, so you got Nebraska at Rutgers. Do you have any opinion there?
Yeah, that was the total that moved against me, but it's moved like 3 points lower since then, since I last looked. So I feel better. So we'll skip that because that's not in range anymore. I'd bet under 137.5. It's 2 points lower, but I do like, let's talk about St. John's.
Okay.
Because I saw out there were odds as high as 19-1 for them to win their conference tournament. And I liked it down to like 10-1. I had them closer to 7-1 true line. And I also laid 4.5 last night. You can get 4.5s or 5s out there against DePaul. And I thought the market in general, especially the place that had 19-1, didn't factor in at all that they kind of have like a half home court advantage at least. You know, they're playing Madison Square Garden. The majority of their home games are there anyways. And
because that can be intimidating to college players, especially.
Yeah, it absolutely can. And you're going to have fans traveling from other schools. So I don't actually like project a full home court edge for St. John's in these games, but it's definitely an edge. I basically use about what I would for half of a home court. Anyway, so I had this at -7. So -4.5, it was a pretty good bet. I'd still bet it at -5, and I'd probably pass after that, to be completely honest, or a smaller bet if you have to get 5.5. But I haven't seen any 5.5s pop yet. DePaul's been a pretty good team in general. And they fight, you know, it might go down to the wire, but maybe I'll get some free throws late to go our way or something if it needs to happen.
That is a 9:30 Eastern tip. And going back to the Big Ten, Matt Eumanns, who will be on Daily Wager later tonight, I believe his best bet's going to be Illinois -2.
Nice.
Against Northwestern. Nice. Any thoughts on that? I feel like he has a man crush on Underwood, so I tease him about that.
I actually feel like, because I've listened to a few things, we did a couple of like rehearsal shows with him, and he used Illinois a couple times.
Yeah.
So maybe he
took Indiana against Illinois.
Oh, okay. So he just used the Illinois games.
Right. Right. No, he follows Big Ten.
Okay.
Went to Purdue. Knows the conference.
I will say it's a little short. I thought if I was the line, I'd make it 2.5. So if he got 1.5 or 2, very, very minimal edge for me. But I would lean that way for sure.
Yeah, I don't know what to make of this Northwestern squad. They had the nice win over Indiana without Wesson, and then Ohio State without Wesson, and then they're just not very good. They've had all those losses. I could see Illinois taking care of business there.
Have you – I'm jumping over to the SEC real quick. Have you followed Georgia much at all?
No, but they should be getting those points, right?
Yeah.
That's a lot of points to be getting.
Yeah, it was 4.5 even, I think, at a couple places last night, 4 most spots right now. That one was really strange, and I really had to dive into it. I was like, I feel like, especially against Missouri, who just hasn't been any good, that we're missing something. And I double-checked, and Hammonds has been out for 2 games. He's a sophomore that's averaging about 12 points. He's nothing crazy special for Georgia. But with him out, they scored 39 against Missouri 2 games ago, and then I think it was 44 or 46. So they've really struggled to score. But the game before that, he was returning from this injury. He played 5 minutes, and they upset Florida on the road. And the game before that, okay, he didn't play. They almost beat Auburn. So I think the reaction here is that the last 2 games without Hammonds, they've been horrible. So now you can get +4 with Georgia when it should probably be more like 1.5. When in reality, they didn't have him before that very much. I think those last 2 games are more fluky. They almost beat Auburn. They did beat Florida on the road without him. He played 5 minutes right at the start, and then that was it. So I like Georgia quite a bit tonight, actually. I think that's one of my bigger edges on the board.
I know it's going to be a square play. Let's keep it in the SEC.
Uh-huh.
But Vandy's really bad. Texas A&M is enticing at -3.5.
I think it is a square play. I know someone that liked Vandy last night that I consider pretty sharp. So,
right. No. So you might look at it. Vandy can't win a game in conference, right?
They're officially 0-18 right?
Yeah. And they're only catching 3.5 on a neutral. And Texas A&M, like, it is the square play, right? Like, there's nobody in their right mind who is a square by definition is going to take Vandy +3.5.
That's a fair point. I should look at these splits. I'm not sure if I have them up right off. I imagine.
Like, there's no 79%
of the
recreational better. Yeah, there's no recreational better that's going to go, hey, I like Vandy +3.5, unless they're just totally contrarian.
I will say, and this probably isn't a sharp move if 79% of the bets are coming in on A&M, but it was 3, and now it's moved to 3.5. So I know, and he still liked Vandy a little bit at 3. So maybe at +3.5, he's going to jump in. But I agree with you that that is probably one of the more sharp versus square, or maybe it's more like a contrarian just versus public outlook on this game. Yeah,
right. And I would be more really concerned if the line moved the other way, if it went to 2.5.
Yeah, I'd gone to 2.5, like
with 79% of the
begging
money
for more,
like the reverse line movement. Right. Yeah. So when there is normal line movement, I'm not as scared as being on the square side. Is that fair?
The square side is going to win a good portion of the time.
Right. So when the market moves with it, it's like, okay, like UNC Duke, right?
Sure.
Overwhelming amount of money moved up. And then sure enough, Carolina did cover ultimately.
Yep. No, I think that's a totally fair assessment.
But like, how do you make that? I guess you can't make it like 5. You're not going to make it 5 or 4.5.
Yeah. At some point as an odds maker, you just need to trust your numbers.
Right.
And know that if you are taking 79% on one side, that you're going to, you know, hopefully be winning overall, you know, through all the games, through all the slates, all week, all year. And so you're not really sweating it too much. I think I mentioned it, though, to you once when Duke UNC was happening, where I thought the number should have been like 4. But if I was an odds maker, I would have opened it a little lower because I actually was anticipating Duke revenge money coming in and all that. And they had barely beat Wake. And so it did open 3, but then it got bet up anyways.
It did open 3. See, yeah. I thought it opened 3.5 and went higher. And I thought
it was even like 2.5, 3. Actually.
I said 4, 4.5. You thought I was crazy because I think the public is very reactionary. And having seen Duke almost lose to Wake and knowing that they lost and got boat raced without Zion at home to Carolina, I thought the public would be on Carolina.
Which I think they wound up being.
Correct.
Because you saw him move a bunch that next day. I wasn't saying you were crazy for thinking it should be there because I thought it should have been 4 too.
Right.
This is without Zion.
Okay.
I was just saying as an odds maker, I would have anticipated Duke money and made it and opened it lower, which it wound up doing, but then they had to move and react to the market anyways.
When there's 2 high-profile programs like that, it's tough to know. Because there was a stupid narrative for both sides, right? Like,
there definitely was.
Revenge, and then obviously, hey, they just beat them in the same teams. Interesting. Okay, so we're talking about those barn burners of games. Any other more interesting games?
What is interesting is that these first round, some of them are playing games while the bigger teams have buys in the early rounds of these conference tournaments. So there isn't anything massively exciting. Big 12, I don't have any thoughts. I thought both games were lined up pretty well. I'm not sure when you took a look last night and this morning. Oklahoma State, TCU, and then on the flip side, you have West Virginia, Oklahoma. I will say going into the year, I thought Oklahoma would be a lot worse than they've turned out to be. And in my head, I feel like West Virginia plus 7 or 6.5 is going to cash, maybe even money line.
Really?
Finally, Oklahoma will finally prove me right. West Virginia has been so bad that it's hard to really back them. So that's when I think that's kind of, I think you have 71% on OU and the line moved from 7 to 6.5 most spots. So that's when I think you get a little contrarian public split there.
I'm leaning tomorrow, Ole Miss minus 2.5 to Alabama. Ole Miss is what? One of the best teams against the number this season. Mostly as a dog, but this Alabama squad is, I think Ole Miss just gets out of there with a nice cover.
Ole Miss is a better, I'm almost certain, offense. I'm not sure how they relate defensively. My guess is that that's about perfect. I'd probably have it more like 2. My guess is actually it might be a little high. So I'll have to dig into the games for tomorrow later on. But yeah, I wouldn't be betting Ole Miss, I don't think, at minus 2.5.
Interesting. I'm trying to scroll through the game. So Notre Dame, nice win yesterday, started out. Now that you start to get those back-to-back games, and I look to play the unders. I'm not the only one. I get that. As these tournaments wear on later on in the week. But in terms of Notre Dame-Louisville, 7.5?
Yeah, I actually think it was just a tad high. It wasn't enough. My number was like 6.5, so you're getting a point of value. Now, one thing I've done regularly when I end up liking a game and the team has played the day before and the other team, their opponent, hasn't played at all in a new arena, I think – I'm not sure where the ACC is. United Center? No. I think Chicago's Big Ten. Chicago.
Yeah, Big Ten's in Chicago, or is it in Indy? I don't know.
They're
used to be in Greensboro, but it moved.
Maybe they're playing in Charlotte,
right?
The Hornets arena, I think. So, and they're using a bunch of NBA arenas now, and Doug can look that up while I walk through this a little bit. But I usually like to play on that team
Charlotte.
In the first half. It is Charlotte then? Okay. So the first half here, you can get, it's 7.5, but you can get 4 in the first half. And if you think it's going to take some time for Louisville to get accustomed to the new arena, they're playing in the Hornets arena. Notre Dame just played there last night and they shot the ball pretty well. There's just maybe a little bit of an extra unquantifiable narrative edge there if you want to go that direction. And so when I do like a team and that situation arises here in these conference tournaments, I generally will split it up and at least bet some first half and some full game.
And fatigue never really becomes a factor till later in the tournament. I mean, these are kids.
Yeah, it's if they're playing 4 or 5 in a row.
Right.
Like back in the day, you remember those UConn teams where they would play like 5 and 5 days and Kemba Walker just went nuts.
Right, that 6 overtime game yesterday was the 10-year anniversary.
Oh, was it?
And,
nice, there you go.
And I think the next game they were fine. It was like the next game after that. Like when they have this, it's really like it's two
compounds
fold.
Eventually,
right.
Yeah.
Eventually, because these are like obviously talented and young athletes and they're okay playing.
Yeah, that's true.
Playing a game.
They can get through. I can't.
It's not like a work
could.
League, overtime game. The next day, guys have to go, like dads have to come back and play the next day. I'm just scrolling through. So you talked about Wazoo. That's a bailout game tonight, 11:30 Eastern tip.
Yeah,
I like
don't
that.
Don't bet any more than you normally would.
Come on.
Unless you're like,
I love
6.
The bailout term. will you play Stanford?
No, I would bet UCLA at 2.5. I really am against that. I couldn't.
Where do you stand on trends like that when it's overwhelming? Not like, they've gone over 6 of their last 9. Like, who cares?
Like 1-21 and 22 games of that season. I think in general, both teams were overvalued as a whole, right? I mean, you look at their overall ATS. Granted, they were both better at home. But yeah, 1-21 is, that's at least somewhat significant, within the season of data that you have at your disposal. So I would say that it's partly fluky. The funniest part to me is that one win was UCLA at Oregon, and they were down 15 or 16 points with like 2 minutes left. They came back, and I think they forced overtime and won the game. Of all the games they probably should have covered or won, that was the one that somehow got there. It could have easily been 0-22. So, my take being from Los Angeles is that these teams suck. And, no one was expecting them to suck this much, and they just could never catch up. I will say, though, UCLA is very weird. You look at some of those teams, and you look at metrics, and you're trying to figure out, like, which ones have been more unlucky, but as a whole, as an aggregate of data on the season, who's maybe better than their record. UCLA falls under that bill. They have been better at, I think, their record shows, and I think that's why I have them as a small favorite. Granted, they're getting 2 against Stanford. So I'm going to be watching it. If it gets to 2.5, honestly, I'll probably be back in the Bruins a little bit.
No. So what about Virginia's ridiculous road record? What is it, 20-3 against the number two seasons?
Let me throw that back at you because I'm not sure I have an answer. But why do you think that's the case that they just keep covering on the road?
Okay, so you start with the power rating. Anytime these things occur, and I think you just did that with UCLA and USC, just saying they were overvalued to start the year. So it starts there. And I think on the road, I mean, look, you can find anything that fits. But I think a team like Virginia, they probably have shorter numbers because of their offense or perceived lack of offense. Because they're mostly road chalk, right? I mean,
yeah,
that's what's so alarming about that. It's not that they're ugly dogs sneaking inside the number. I would say.
And they're usually losing or close at halftime. So
yeah,
usually
I mean,
the second
I have
half.
I had a friend who used to say like the Cowboys were better to bet on the road than at home because when they're at home, everyone loves them and they're reading all the press clippings. Where I think there's like not like an us against the world thing, but I just do. I do think having played sports a little bit, like you on the road, like you, sometimes you're more focused. Like now, but I say that, but then I also think the Lakers are going to fold like a cheap suit this weekend. So I think Virginia being a strong team. And can galvanize, and they play with a chip on their shoulder a little bit.
You want to hear my semi-hot take about Virginia stuff?
Yeah.
I kind of put it together here. There's no math whatsoever. This is my – I've played basketball growing up in my life. This is what I think it is.
I know what it is, too.
This is pretty – I don't know. Well, if you pick this out, then I'd be surprised. We'll see. You can tell me after. But one thing I've always thought, and we've seen it in the NBA, and I saw someone critique LeBron and the Lakers for actually doing this year a lot, is teams, when they have open shots – don't take them right away. They're content and try to run the offense for a few more seconds to get a better shot. But a lot of times, like if LeBron's wide open for three in the NBA in 2019, wide open threes are pretty good shots to take, but they don't take them. And when you're playing Virginia, for whatever reason, teams know like, okay, we got to really grind where they're playing this slow pace. When they have open looks, they don't take them for some reason. They're trying to look for a better shot, but then they end up taking worse ones because Virginia's defense is really good.
Right. There's only one open opportunity.
And what did UMBC do last year? They just kept chucking their threes and they went in, which is great. That's how they beat Virginia in that first round matchup, the 16-1 seed. But as soon as you have any daylight, you got to shoot. But when you're playing on the road, this home team, they're amped to play Virginia. You know, Louisville comes out. They had a 10-point lead, I think, at halftime. You're trying to – my take is that these kids are excited to play Virginia, maybe pull off this upset, and they're kind of a little, you know, happy shooting the ball right away in that first half. They're launching threes. They're attacking the rim harder, and they're just not hesitating. Then they have this lead, and at halftime they go in, and they're like, all right, let's keep it up, you know, blah, 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 blah. Then they're a little more hesitant in the second half. They're not shooting as quick because they're like, we got to run clock. We got to lead, and that just plays right into Virginia. And so I don't know. I think a part of it's a little trigger happy with these kids early, which is I think the way to beat Virginia. And then coincidentally, they get a little more hesitant, and then the game slips away, and you know then they're taking bad shots down in the last couple minutes trying to get back. So that's just something I kind of put together where I think the way to beat Virginia is as soon as you have a good look, just take it. You got to, especially if it's a 3-pointer, it's worth 3 points. Duke, you know that first matchup, I think it was in Virginia. Maybe it was the second time they met, but like, where did they hit their first seven threes? And Duke isn't even a good 3-point shooting
ridiculous.
Team. And then Virginia can't play from behind very well. Generally, you know, we saw it in that tournament game, and then we saw it against Duke there. Like, if they're down double digits, it's tough for them to usually grind back. And so that Louisville game the other day is what stands out is Louisville just got really content and sat on the ball, and that's not what you want to do in a Virginia game.
My theory is that they're defense just kind of wears on teams, and they're just sort of like,
and it kind of goes with what I'm
grind
saying
it out of.
Yeah.
So you're the, sort of the mental approach and stuff like that. I kind of agree. It's just kind of like they wear on you, and they do force you to play their game. But I like your rationale a lot better.
How much do you think? I know this is kind of a little off topic. How much do you think kids and players at college level are afraid to take a big shot in the second half, and so they pass one up so that the one guy that's supposed to take the big shots takes it? Because you're going to have someone that's taking the isolation step back because he's the guy who's supposed to. He's your best player. But if someone was in the corner and had a nice look, they should be taking that. But I feel like so many times in second halves, especially the last 5 to 7 minutes, kids are afraid to just put it up because they're not so-and-so. You know, they're not the player that's supposed to be leading the team. And I think that kind of, you know, backfires a few times.
That's a good question. I think it just depends. I mean, because there's such high variance with college teams, right? There's 300 something teams.
Yeah.
So like you're asking me a question that like it's a different answer.
Right. Depends on who it is.
Carolina versus like BC and Pitt in conference.
It's like the anti Robert Horry. Like Robert Horry never really needed to shoot, but when it was there and he needed to,
he didn't worry about his place.
He didn't care. He took
the
shot.
The pecking order
absolutely
did not matter to him.
So if you can be just try to be more like Robert Horry, that's the moral of that story.
Yeah. Big shot Bob's everywhere.
Yep.
So I'm going to, who you, real quickly, who are you buying and selling this tournament, or who are you looking for spots? Like, I'm looking to fade the Lakers. I'm looking to fade the Duke, fake Duke hard, which is what I said, I believe, a week ago. Like, any teams that you're kind of buying and selling.
Yeah, I was going to try to get to it on the show. I know, you know, we're cut a little shorter with time on actual air, but Texas Tech, you know, I gave them out at plus 160 to win the Big 12 tournament. I had them closer to like plus 118 true line, which is a pretty big edge. I think they're almost winning this thing half the time. Well, this is one where you can still get anywhere as high as 30-1 for them to win it all right now. And my feeling is that they're only a three seed. They've come on late. If they sweep through the Big 12 tournament, they're probably going to get to the two line. Probably not a one seed, but I think they are like borderline top five team, at least top seven. They're in that mix with kind of North Carolina, Kentucky, Tennessee there, 4, 5, 6, 7. If they get to the two seed, they sweep the Big 12, they win the tournament. I think those 25-1s, 30-1s will be 15-1s in a week, you know, come Sunday night. So I would bet Texas Tech now, buy them early. If they lose in the Big 12 tournament, 25-30-1 will still be there anyways later.
Do you like them to win the conference?
So it can only
tournament?
Go down, in my opinion. Yeah, yeah. That's what we took plus 160 yesterday. Right. Yeah.
Right. No, I think they are they're legit.
Yeah.
They're legit.
Their defense is the best in the country. And in those cases, in the past where Chris Beard's had these teams that couldn't score, eventually catches up to him. But Culver's been fantastic. I think he's averaging like 18-4-4. He's a little bit more of a playmaker this year. And they have this guy, I apologize, it's David Valetti. Vitetti, something like that. He shoots over 48% from three on like 4.2 attempts per game. He's one of the best 3-point shooters in the country. They just have more offense and it's clicked for about 6 weeks. They've been averaging over 80 points. And if you can score 80 points and have the best defense in the country, you know, that's usually a pretty good formula.
Any other teams? Where do you stand on Duke? I mean, Zion's going to come back at some point. I'm assuming not 100%, but I just feel like they're constantly overvalued because they cannot shoot.
Yeah, you know, in that first game to open the season, I saw him against Kentucky and was blown away, and I was driving around Vegas trying to get down at plus 450 and plus 400. So I'm invested pretty heavily in Duke futures. I hope he plays. If not, I don't think there's a chance they win if he doesn't play, to be completely honest. I really would put their chances very, very slim. Luckily, I have some backup plans. I have a little bit of Gonzaga, a little bit of Kentucky, some Texas Tech. But I need Zion, I think, for them to really make a realistic run. And hopefully he comes back and gets a game or two under his belt in the ACC tournament
Right. Rather
than throwing him into the mix, you know, in a week.
Any other teams?
I will say when we're talking about tournaments and you're trying to find a team that's just extremely kind of hot, like you're looking for that variance. You want to embrace the variance. And what I mean by that is a team that, for example, shoots a lot of three-pointers, they can shoot 15% in a game and lose to a 15 or a 14 seed, but they could shoot 40, 45, 50% for a couple weekends and win the entire thing. This is a team that was about 9-10, I think, preseason entering the season. They haven't lived up to expectations, but Auburn is a team, like I think Lenardi has them around a 5 seed, more or less in that range. They did just beat Tennessee. They looked pretty good. They're athletic, and they defend well enough, and they shoot enough threes that if they're just hot, they're a team that's absolutely talented enough to make a deep run. It's one of those where at the price, which I believe was like 60-1 last I saw, I think technically that actually has a little value. And so it's one of those also you can maybe wait and see how they're shooting to start the game. But if you wanted to jump in and kind of ride an Auburn train or a team that's similar, like Wofford's another one that's not a major conference team, but they're going to shoot a lot of threes. And I think they shoot 41.6%. It's like second in the nation. If they're making them, then they can. That's, I mean, it's that they're the like really popular pick, but it's true. They just shoot enough threes. If they're making them, they're going to beat whoever they're playing almost. And so if they're missing them, they're going to lose to whoever they're playing. And it's kind of one of those you want to pick those teams out to make some deep runs when you're filling out your brackets and embrace that variance of the 3-point shot.
That's the beauty of the Big Dance is because of their ability to just get hot on a neutral court. You never know. Like a team could look like world beaters one game and then go cold the next. And you have to just be very, don't be so reactionary.
I still feel bad to the Brad Stevens-Butler team in the final against UConn, when they held UConn to like 21% shooting, and they still couldn't win because they shot 16%. Like, no one could make a shot.
That game was terrible.
It was really, it was one of the worst sporting events anyone's ever seen.
It felt like the Rams-Patriots game to a certain extent.
Yeah, that's actually a pretty good call.
Yeah, I made the call, I think, on Twitter.
Yeah.
All right, man, look, it's been awesome hanging out all week. We're going to run it back tonight. And the beard looks glorious on television, as it should.
Thank you.
And we're going to have some fun on the show.
It will. For people that, they're wondering, like, what is it like? In the end, man, we get to cover sports, talk about betting on them, the lines.
Great.
It's the best thing in the world. I mean, I love it, and I'm just glad that I can be here doing it with you guys.
Well, you're a huge addition to the team, and it's going to be fun as we go forward with March Madness and everything else.
Cool. Thanks, Doug.
All right, bud.
Pay that man his money.
All right, thanks to Preston Johnson. Check out his beautiful, beautiful beard and insight and analysis basically every day on Daily Wager. Again, 6 to 7 Eastern on ESPN News and the ESPN app, And I know a lot of you have reached out in terms of availability. So the show will not be part of the podcast. So we will not put it on the stream. However, it's available every day on the app. So go to the app. There's all those shows. You can re-watch it. You don't have to like DVR it live. So you can go watch it on the app.
DVR.
And,
come on, what are we in?
Hey, I DVR 2006? I want to watch it in bed, man. I
know you do because.
Right. My 10 TVs. But, yeah, no, it's a lot of fun. And it's a work in progress. So work with us here. And, enjoy and chime in. But it won't be on the podcast. You can't listen to it in the car, but you can play it from your phone app, your ESPN app, and just listen to it that way. Kai, you got to check it out. We need all the eyeballs.
Oh, man, every day. I tweeted out a picture yesterday when I was checking it out.
Yeah.
The first day, I didn't realize it was the launch day. I was just,
You're too busy hanging out at Disney World.
Well, I was watching PTI, and I was kind of just, getting ready to wind up my day, and I was like, oh, DK, look at this.
What do you know?
That was awesome, man. And then yesterday was just a treat because right after I got to watch Dolan on on the great Michael Kay show, I got to watch a little Daily Wager. So it's becoming a part of my day.
Good. That's the idea. That's what we want. So look, man, good luck to the Giants in tank mode. As a Laker fan, I certainly can identify. It's abysmal. Yeah.
Go Nets, though. You definitely called that one.
Yeah, I dipped my toe in. I can't take full credit because I was a little gun shy with it. But I did have a good feeling about them this year.
I'm glad you did.
It starts with coach and management, and I like their star players, obviously. All right, bud. Thank you for adjusting your schedule, accommodating, and I hope all of our loyal listeners are subscribing, downloading, rating, and reviewing.
There we go.
All right. Yeah, exactly. All right. Until next time on the Behind the Bets, go check out Daily Wager every day, 6 to 7 p.m. Eastern on ESPN News and the ESPN app.
Thanks for listening to Behind the Bets. You can listen and subscribe on the ESPN app or download and listen on Apple Podcasts.